Niall, that was, wasn't that a beautiful song?
It was lovely, that one.
Yes. So tell us how you hold your head up.
It's very hard. It's very hard to hold your head up, especially when you suffer from mental ill health. You always put your head down to the ground. Hope that nobody talks about you or follows you or from paranoia, all that sorts of stuff. It's great to get a good day, to be able to go up early and go out early.
Like you did today.
Like I did today, Lakshmi. Yes. Yeah.
It's a bit hard to get up in the morning, isn't it, with all your medication?
Very hard. I take a medication called Clozaril, along with a sleeping tablet at night, and some Venlafaxine vaccine. And basically, it is hard to go to bed at any time of the day.
To make sure that you would get up, I did call you.
You did.
I have a fair idea of what it is.
Yeah.
Fair idea. Yeah. That's all. You know. So tell us how. When did you know that you had schizophrenia?
I used to think people used to think it was voice of friends, imaginary friends. But I realised about seven that I had voices. I remember at the age of seven trying to hang myself out of the banisters.
How old were you then?
Seven.
Seven?
Yeah. Because the voices were telling me to do it. You know, so.
And is it, how do you think, explain to me what you feel about schizophrenia.
You know, people call it schizophrenia, I'd call it hearing voices, Lakshmi. I believe that it's kind of a gift. In the West, it's stigmatised. In the East, you'd be called a holy man or a holy woman if you had it. I don't know. I find it's you know, schizophrenia is very tough. It's a tough one on the mind because yeah, like I had an argument with a bus driver
today.
Going back years ago.
Yeah,
and I remember for about 2 years after that, every time I seen a bus, he used to pull me hood up because I used to think his buddies were coming to get me.
So you feel kind of, you feel that unnecessary, actually it wasn't true.
Yeah.
So you believe that people were against you.
Yeah.
Or rather coming to get you.
Coming to get me, yeah.
That's one of the symptoms.
Yeah.
You feel fear. Fear. I suppose with fear you can't do anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit difficult to function in the so-called ordinary world.
Very hard.
Yes, yes.
You know, I would have isolated myself a lot.
And does the voices interfere with your everyday life?
They do. I have four voices. Simon is one. He's helpful. I have another voice that actually navigates where I go. If I'm going up a street, it'll tell me to take a right, take a left. And then I have two negative voices. And they'll tell me to do negative things and bad things. And it's trying to keep them two negative voices under control.
And the other two voices are not so bad, is it?
No. Well, they can get nasty.
Yes.
Yeah.
They can. Any of these voices can get nasty.
Yeah. See, I'm in dialogue with the voices. A fella called Rufus May and his wife Elizabeth. They dialogue with voices. So I started dialoguing with the voices and it's actually helped me immensely.
Well, is that a technique that you use for when you hear voices?
Yeah, it's just a dialogue with them, talk to them. Ask them, look, I need to get this done today. If you could help me, it'd be brilliant. Congratulations, I'll congratulate you for helping me out.
Right. So you try to make that voice not a negative one, but a positive one.
Yes.
So from a negative to positive.
To positive, yes.
So you need to have a talk with the voices.
Yeah.
Yes, instead of being afraid of them.
Yeah, talk with them, dialogue with them.
Yeah. Do you go into therapy?
No, I used to. I've done a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, it has helped me. I remember thinking at the start, saying, I'll just do this and look back and see if it worked or not.
Yeah.
And I done one, it was based on a family model.
Yes.
So they brought in women, men, and looked like me aunts, me uncles, mothers, brothers, sisters.
Yeah.
And we walked in, I think, for 2 years in that sort of tandem with that group, and it was brilliant.
You mean it was a family therapy? Or is it? Did you bring your own family?
No,
no,
just myself.
And other people.
And other people who were
unwell.
Representing.
Well, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it was brilliant.
Yes. So, how do you, for instance, when you, do you have? What do you think of schizophrenia? How did you get it? Like, Well, is there a way that you think about it?
It's hereditary in my family. My grandfather had it. I have aunts and uncles that have had it. I have cousins who have it. I always knew I had it. I masked it. I used to use drugs and drink to mask the main issue, which was mental health. So it's only when I was 23 and I gave up the drink and drugs that I soon realised that I had to deal with my mental health issues.
When you were growing up, did you know that your grandfather or your families had this?
I knew an uncle of mine had it. You know, he was one of my favourite uncles, my Uncle Peter. I knew that he had it. I knew that my other uncle, good Uncle Eddie, had it as well. You know, because I used to talk to them a lot.
And then when you were diagnosed with, should I call diagnosed?
Yeah.
Because people have languages. People who don't have schizophrenia have a language to describe schizophrenia.
Like my poor mother now, she had schizophrenia. She never got it looked at. She never went. People tried to help her years ago to go and get the diagnosis, and she wouldn't do it because I think she was afraid that the government would take me off of her.
I'm
an only son, and she was a single mother, Lexmi.
Right.
So she was afraid that they'd take me.
Yes.
But she got diagnosed at 58.
Right.
And she was bad herself with.
Yes. So you grew up with a mother who had schizophrenia?
Yeah, yeah.
And when did they find out that?
When she was 58.
58?
Yeah.
Right. And how?
She went in, she was hearing voices. She says that our walls were bugged and the people were listening and the usual, it's just a panic.
That fear.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you find now, for instance, how do people kind of treat you when they get to know that you have schizophrenia? Nobody sees, there's the labels are already,
I think they look at the shining or something, here's Johnny, that part of the shining or Norman Bates and Psycho.
Ah.
You know,
when. So they think they're all psychos.
Yeah, these moral panics that people have created, saying that anybody who was unwell shouldn't be part of society.
Yes.
And they should be locked away.
Yes.
You know, it's a moral panic, the whole thing is.
So tell me a little bit more about it. The stigma, you mean?
Very stigmatizing. Like, I had a girl once called Deborah Higgins, and she says to me, Neil, it's not paranoid schizophrenia. It's hearing voices. She says to me, and it's not mental health. It's mind health. So it's linguistics. We have to try and use a more positive linguistics than negative connotations.
Yes, that's really interesting. You mean? We have to change the way we talk about it.
Yes, we have to stop looking at people as a sickness.
Yes.
Like I myself, I do medical model with holistic model.
Yeah.
So I'd be on medication along with doing recovery.
Yes.
And it seems to work for me.
Yes, yes. So you mean you need both?
Need both.
Because it helps you to keep schizophrenia at bay, like.
Yeah.
Is that it? So, in other words, it's to live with schizophrenia.
It is to live with schizophrenia rather than cure it.
Ignore it.
Yeah.
Do you forget to take your medication? That happens quite a lot.
I do. I'm in a homeless hostel at the moment.
Yes.
And the staff are great. They say to me all throughout today, did you take your tablets? How did you go today? Did you take your tablets this morning? Did you take them this evening? So I have the staff there, which are a great help to me. The Peter McVary staff are great.
Yes. So you're with Peter McVary?
Yeah.
How did you get into that?
Basically, I got very unwell and I got released from the hospital and I had nowhere to go. So I got put into a McVary one night only hostel in the beginning and then I got sent to a DCC hostel called Frederick Hall. I then got moved out of that into another hostel called Grant & Mills, which was on Camden Street. And then I got moved across to Canal House. I was in Canal House for 2 years and now I'm back over on Stephen's Green. But hopefully I'm being housed. I had a TD there get in contact with me, and he says, hopefully you'll be helped before Christmas.
So you have been moving around a lot?
Yes. Yeah. And
did you ever have a stable home once? Unless you were
not around, really, right? Lakshmi. No, I never had my own house, to be honest with you.
When you were with your mum,
quite stable. Yeah, with my mother.
That's the last time you had a stable
home,
roof over your head.
Yeah.
Yes. And I suppose you had a whole group of people with your relations.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then people, what was it like growing up in a family?
I was an only child.
Yes.
So it was quite hard because, you know, my mother being unwell.
Yes.
I wouldn't have noticed her being unwell because she never got diagnosed.
Yes.
But I remember she'd buy me a turtle, a terrapin, 1 week, bring her back the next week. Buy me a guinea pig, bring her back the next week, you know.
You mean she did that just so that you couldn't keep it?
Yeah, well, she obviously thought, you know.
She had these ideas that you need a guinea pig and then, no, we'll take it back.
Yeah.
So as a child, you had confusing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So when now, how do you feel now that you're more stable with the Father McQuarrie's,
Hopefully, I'll get help soon, Lakshmi. That's basically my basic need at the moment. And then I can get myself back into the gym and feed myself and, you know,
independent.
I love cooking. And over in that place, they don't allow you to cook, which is killing me.
Yes. You used to cook a lot.
Used to cook a lot.
That's a good idea, isn't
it?
Good therapy.
Yeah. Cooking therapy.
Oh, yes. Cooking therapy is very, very good, actually. I would promote it.
Yes.
Cooking together or doing your own thing. It makes you feel that you have a roof over your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your heart and your heart, is it?
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I met you in the Trialogue. Could you tell us a bit about Trialogue so that our listeners can hear?
Basically, what we do is we set Trialogue up, Lee McGowan, John Kelly, myself, and a couple of others, Siobhan McKeown, set up Trialogue, and Lakshmi, set up Trialogue. And it's basically based around service users, service providers, and family members.
Yes.
Now, what we try to do is that if a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a social worker or anybody who claims to be a person who works within the industry, we ask them to leave the hat and the coat at the door.
I like the way you call it an industry.
Yeah.
It is.
It is an industry.
Yes.
We ask them to leave the hat and coat at the door.
Yeah.
And what we do is we then proceed to have a talk.
Yes.
And we can pick a topic, or it can just be naturally flowing conversation. But usually, you can see stuff actually happening to people. The whole demeanour changes. They smile. They come in with very staunch faces, and they leave smiling. You know, and I have a feeling Trialogue is something that does work. You know.
So Trialogue is between three, it's conversations between three groups of people that normally don't have such conversations.
Yeah, no.
In hospitals, for instance, you could meet a doctor or a professional and they'll have a certain time, allocated time.
Yeah.
And then you know, isn't it? When you go to a therapist or that they seem to have a higher position.
Like, beyond the Trialogue, I do stuff with Hearden Voices Ireland, I've Hearden Voices Dublin, and it's conversation amongst themselves, but it never gets to the doctor or it never gets to the carer.
Yeah.
It's totally separate from that.
Yes.
Whereas with Trialogue, you actually start to interact with the doctors and you interact them with the carers and you interact them with other people who have the same intent problems as you.
Yes, those who are service users.
Yes.
So it's a conversation between service users, professionals, and carers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of the main things, because I'm part of this the Trialogues, right?
Yeah.
Is that as a so-called professional, you are talking equally with people instead of talking down to them or talking up to them.
We're all at the same level.
Yeah. And how do you feel about that?
I love it. I think that it actually works. We started off with two or three people. And now we have like 5-6 people coming for the core group meeting. And hopefully this year, with a bit of a push, we'll try and get more people in.